Dr. Braun will be providing the next two presentations.
Thank you. Well, I felt privileged to be following these group. Melissa, that was really interesting. Thank you. I hadn't seen any of those results from you, so it was nice that you shared those with us today. Before I kind of get started, I'm going to speak on two things today. One is just some baseline caries numbers that we've been looking at, and I'll point out why we are interested in knowing what our baseline caries rates are. And then some evaluation of the Cavity Free at Three program. And so I've had the privilege of recently going to the Academy of Pediatrics and learning about how medical providers, or more importantly, non-dental providers, can start to help impact the disease of caries. And I feel very privileged to be in Colorado because as I look at my other non-dental colleagues, I see that they come from states where their initiatives are started, but they're kind of left empty-handed to try to go and figure out how to do this themselves. So this has been this trend that's coming across the United States, and in a lot of states, somebody says somebody needs to be doing something about this. Something is created that's delivered, and who knows if it is effective at addressing cavities. And so in Colorado, we were particularly fortunate because we had funders come together who essentially said, okay, Colorado needs to start doing something about the cavities in our kids. And so they got together and with funding have provided all of this. And the benefits of these motivators for us, like Linda Reiner, who's in the room, has been that it has allowed us to come up with a program that has some integrity. And what I mean by that is that we have a panel of experts who came up with the way the program would look. And we felt it was very important to involve a risk assessment, that it involved oral health education. We benefited from the expertise of people like Francisco Ramos Gomez in California with our self-management tool. And we have been vigilant to try to keep our message strong and not diluted. And so I want to commend the Cavity Free at Three folks in that we now try to deliver a cohesive and comprehensive message to the people that we go and train. We hope the message is consistent across sites. And so we have now standardized presentations and a standardized format that we feel the content is strong and consistent. And so we're lucky to come from a state where we could do that. And the benefit of that is then those kind of programs that have some consistency and strength are a little bit easier to evaluate. As you can see, this project is impacting lots of different kinds of providers. We have public health nurses, we've got pediatricians, we've got family docs. And so what if you have a project and you're delivering that, what could that look like in all of these different venues? And we want to try to understand that as best as we can. So I have three hats. One, my public health hat is, I'm going to try to jostle my hats. My public health hat is that dentists don't worry. You're never going to get non-dental providers to do anything more than these basic dental procedures. So hopefully when we talk about non-dental providers providing this, we're not a threat. Now I'm preaching to public health dentists, so I think I'm not talking to the wrong crowd. But I hope that as we collaborate, our dental providers don't see us as a threat, but just as colleagues try to start to tackle this disease. And you guys know as well as I do that the problems are, as Melissa has pointed out, that number one, there are areas all over the country, but in Colorado specifically, that don't have dental providers at all. And so there isn't a dental provider there to provide any other services. And so it's really the responsibility of those of us who are seeing those kids to take that role on. Two, as you know too, dentists historically have not been seeing kids very young, and so this is really Cavity Free at Three. The services that we are delivering is really for very young kids. And I'll speak to that. Across the state, every state differences. Amos Denard here, I don't know if he's here or not. He's a pediatrician from Minnesota, and you guys know him, and he's the prophet, they say, as of pediatricians, and I just had the honor of getting to know him, and every state is different, and let me give you some examples. In Washington and in Minnesota, their Medicaid has allowed non-dental providers to provide these very basic preventive dental services at any kind of visit to up to children 18 years old. In Colorado, we had the fortune of having Medicaid and our state dental director on our board as our technical assistance team as we got this started. And so in Colorado specifically, now Melissa is probably doing the services, not getting reimbursed for it necessarily, but I'll speak for myself. I'm a medical provider. I'm a pediatrician. And so in Colorado, we are allowed to provide these services only at EPSDT visits up to the age of 5. And so this really limited. It's well child care visits up to age 5, and that's the group that doesn't have other dental services. After that, we have to have dental providers who are willing to see these kids. So that's hopefully our next step. And then, of course, in Colorado, we're not as good as other states. Only 1 out of our 10 dental providers see kids with Medicaid. And so that's our other challenge. And so we've had to come up with these other tools to address these issues. And hopefully in 10 years, we can come up and say, we don't need to do this anymore because there's dental providers in every county who see kids under 3 and who seek Medicaid. But until that comes, then we have to at least try to do our part. So just a little public health pitch. So what I want to present to you, this program is being implemented across the state, but we wanted to try to understand its effectiveness in as best we can. And so I work at Denver Health, and Denver Health is here in Denver. And so we are hoping to measure the effectiveness of this program at reducing caries in this controlled setting. And so what I'm going to do first is present some baseline measures that we have at Denver Health. And then hopefully, as the project is implemented, we'll be able to show that it is, in fact, reducing cavities. So I don't have anything to disclose. We've talked about this a little bit. Just a reminder, you guys all know caries is the disease process. Cavities are the result. I just wanted to pull out one specific point. So in Colorado, a little over 30% of our Head Start kids have cavities, and I wanted to just specifically talk about that because that's the age range of kids that I'll be talking to today, 3 to 4 year olds, essentially, 3 to 4.5 year olds. So my objectives for today are I'm going to describe the baseline early childhood caries rate in Denver Health's 3 to 4 year olds. I want to describe the baseline oral health knowledge, attitudes, beliefs, and behaviors of their parents or caregivers, and compare these knowledge, attitudes, and beliefs and behaviors of caregivers of children with and without cavities. So just to reiterate a little bit about Denver Health, it is Denver's largest safety health and care system. There are clinics all around this convention center in Hyatt. We have 8 federally qualified health centers. 3 of them have co-located dental clinics in their buildings. 5 don't. We are going to expand 1, so soon 4 will. But despite 3 of them having co-located dental services, fewer than 7% of our kids under 4 had ever been to that dental provider, despite the fact that they were literally in the same building. And our providers are willing to see these kids. I'm fortunate to have dental providers that are happy to see young kids. But regardless, they weren't getting there, so that there's barriers to that happening. These clinics serve Denver kids. We see over 75% of kids who are born in Denver County. Denver County is the same as Denver City, so we really are serving those kids in Denver. And over 75% of those kids are on Medicaid. So Denver's kids are Denver Health's kids. And so to measure to kind of get an idea of what our baseline cavity rates were in our children, we chose kids who are Denver Health patients, and we define that by having had at least 2 well child care visits within our system, and we define them as a recent user if they had a visit within the last 18 months. Now, in reality, the mean number of well child care visits in this population is 5. So we set a baseline of 2, but in fact, they are our kids. And so of these 1,500, we started to call them randomly. We called 1,250 of these kids. About 65% of those didn't have a functioning phone number or weren't home, or the phone was out of service, which is relatively typical of our patient population. We find that in whatever we do to try to call folks, we have a hard time with that. But we were able to, and mind you, we called 3 times approximately, and after we tried, we just moved to the next one. So we just moved down the list until we got our person contacted. We were able to contact a little over 400 patients, 35% of them, and of those, we were able to schedule almost 60% for a visit. So we felt that this was a relatively good representation of the Denver Health kids that we're serving. 41% of kids refused to come in for that dental exam. Those reasons were various. Sometimes that day that we provided them wasn't convenient for them. We didn't have an open schedule. Sometimes they had just seen the dental provider and didn't feel like it was necessary. But we did get 260 of them to be scheduled for a visit, and of those, 200 came in and had their mouth examined. So we had two dental hygienists measure our cavities. They were calibrated to the caries measurement. They used the NIDCR protocol to measure cavitated lesions, either the DMFS, so either decayed or missing for caries or filled or surfaces. We also use the Drury criteria, and just to remind ourselves what that is, that measures those white spot lesions, so preceding decay. The two hygienists visualized the teeth of children. They dried them first. They used an overhead light source. They didn't probe, and they did not use x-rays. So we may have missed some of those interproximal surface cavities. But remember, these are three-year-olds, so a lot of times you can visualize those anyway. And it was a consistent measurement. Along with measuring their cavities, we surveyed families using the conceptual framework of the health belief model. We used validated questions whenever possible. The survey was handwritten. It was first piloted and then refined, and then we administered at that visit in both English and in Spanish. And so these are our results. So of the 202 kids we saw, their mean age in general is about 3.5, ranging from 3 to 4.5. And as you can see, the differences between those children with and without cavities was pretty minimal. They were all Hispanic, essentially. They all are poor, 80% had Medicaid, 10% have SCHIP, and so really a public assistance group. That's the population that Denver Health serves. That's Denver's population. The only significant difference between children with and without cavities was the education of the parent caregiver who was completing the survey at that time. And the families with higher cavity rates had lower education. So here's our baseline cavity rate. So 46% of our kids had D2MFS, and so that's actual decay. And it's prevalence, it's not incidence, so sometimes these teeth will have been filled. 65% had only D1 lesions, but if you add them together and you include D1, D2, 76% of our 3 to 4-year-olds have a lot of decay. So we have a high-risk population. So it seems like it's an appropriate population to provide these services. So just some baseline attitudes of these parent caregivers who are completing the survey. In general, they have good when asked how important were these things at preventing cavities. About two-thirds of families reported that drinking water with fluoride was important. So, and then regarding dental visits, limiting between meal snacks, limiting sugary snacks, brushing with fluoride, fluoridated toothpaste, brushing their child's teeth, everybody felt that these were all important. But as we know, believing that these things are important doesn't drive behaviors. We all know it's not good to overeat, and we all overeat at times. So when looking at risk factors for cavities, let's look and see how they compared with their access to dental care. And so about half of them, a little bit more than half, had seen a dental provider. The majority of those who had seen the provider in the last year. Most had more than one visit. Only about a quarter of them had only one visit. And again, these are a random sample of kids in our system. These aren't kids that are just coming to the dental clinic. So that's what's interesting for us. And there wasn't any difference in those three variables between the kids without and with cavities. But there was a difference between the kids with cavities and without cavities if they had been seen for a preventive dental visit. And so just the yellow is cavities, green is no cavities, and we saw that kids who had a preventive dental visit have fewer cavities, so $2 for the preventive dental visit. Regarding toothbrushing behaviors, about 80% of kids brush their teeth. Parents reported that their kids brush their teeth at least once a day. About the same reported that they brushed their children's teeth once a day. There wasn't any difference between the children with or without cavities. Thank goodness, few of these 3 to 4 year olds had not weren't on a bottle. They didn't sleep with a bottle. They didn't sleep with a sippy cup, so we were reassured by that. They all snack. Over 90% have those between meal snacks and their children, so that's a common behavior. And there wasn't any difference between those kids with that with and without cavities in any of those areas either. Looking at fluoride, we know fluoride, systemic fluoride helps, and topical fluoride at home helps prevent cavities. And so about 2/3 drink tap water. Now that was interesting, and when just anecdotally, when I asked families if they drink tap water, this is a Hispanic population. As we know, Hispanics typically are a little bit averse to drinking public water. So they report that that they drink tap water 2/3 of the time. So that is good to hear. That 2/3 of the time they're brushing with fluoride, and very few of them take any other source of fluoride. And in general, we're from Colorado, we have nice fluoridation of our water, so few people do prescribe fluoride drops. No difference between either group. So looking at this vertical transmission of strep mutans from the primary caregiver to the child. And so there was a significant difference here, and this has been shown in prior studies, that kids who have cavities are more likely to have a family member with cavities. It's that transmissibility, and it just emphasizes how transmissible this is. So kids who had cavities were far more likely to have had a parent report that they had recent cavities. And they also were significantly more likely to have somebody in the house. And so, and this is one I just want to digress for just 1 second. When we go and teach professionals, medical providers, there's a couple of points that are like, wow, really? And here these medical providers don't know about this vertical transmission. And honestly, I think I was one of those when I first started. So this is really a new teaching point, both from the us providers, but for the families too. So that's hopefully going to be a message that we can start to share. Now, we all know that eventually everybody's going to get strep mutans, but if we can delay the acquisition of that as long as possible, maybe we'll benefit. And so what are the strengths of this study? So it felt good. It's a representative sample of Denver's young kids. Denver Health sees these kids, and we have tried to be as vigilant in trying to sample a selective population, or a representative sample, excuse me. We tried to be very diligent about how we measured cavities, recognizing that that would be an important element. And then we tried to narrow the age range. We all know that age has a, you saw Karen's graph about the vertical rise of cavities over time, and so age is an important variable to look at. There are some limitations. There's some selection bias. I don't know about what the cavity rates are of kids that we weren't able to contact, but hopefully they're, hopefully that won't, I think that who we were able to contact and who we weren't are going to be equally representative. Denver Health's population is not going to be everybody's population, so the findings that we have found here may not be generalizable to all populations. And I'll just direct the concern that dental hygienists aren't allowed to diagnose cavities, but we certainly know that they can measure cavities, and so that's to be mentioned. So in conclusion, so Denver's 3 to 4 year old population have very high cavity caries prevalence. Almost all parents report that limiting between meal snacks is important, but nobody does it. Almost all children frequently snack. It's a hard one to address. Just slightly more than half of families drink tap water, and children without cavities were more likely to have had a recent preventive dental visit, so that was reassuring. Children with cavities were more likely to have someone in their house, especially a primary caregiver with recent cavities, so that's a risk factor. And then we found that a lot of these behaviors weren't associated with cavities. So I wanted to thank the team. I don't know if you've seen this, but this is just a list of my colleagues. I work at the Children's Outcome Research Center, and so a lot of my assistance is from people there, and we have a lot of very generous funders, which has helped us all happen.